Welcome to the full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:16 p.m. and today is August 9th. Well, the Nasdaq is down 170 points, but I think the more important point is that it is looking less consistent than it has done over the last 6 months. So it is now pulling back down into the underlying range, and that's the first time it's done that in at least the last 6 months. So it's meaningful that it's also occurring in the region of the peak from back in 2021. And then if we look at some of the more overextended trends, particularly Nvidia, where today they announced that they've got a brand new chip and it's more efficient and that it's been specifically designed for artificial intelligence, and yet the share is down. And this is the biggest downward dynamic we've seen in a while. And of course, it is way overextended, considering that the share went from just a tad over 100 in October of last year to about 475 just about 3 weeks ago. That's a pretty impressive performance by any stretch of the imagination. And now I think we're going to see at least some pause and consolidation. When a share like this can't rebound on good news, then one does have to pay attention. Then, of course, we also have Apple, and the share had also rebounded really quite impressively and has now started to pull back. Now, there's no doubting here that the trend is way less consistent than it had been in the past. So we're unwinding the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. That moving average now coincides with the peak from back in late 2021, so it's a potential area where we might anticipate at least some support beginning to come back in. But I think that it's important that we should just pay attention to the fact that interest rates are still high, bond yields are still high, and consumers are inevitably going to start to experience some stress or distress as the cost of borrowing and sustaining interest payments on loans, for example, are going to become more difficult. Now, Microsoft, having surged in the aftermath of wholeheartedly embracing artificial intelligence, has failed to sustain the move above $350. It did it for about a day and then came straight back down again, and the dynamic of the failure is bigger than the dynamic of the breakout, and now it is pushing down to a new reaction low. At the minimum, this is a reversion back down towards the 200-day moving average, which would suggest that there's at least another 7 or 8% on the downside before we should expect to see at least some pause and consolidation. But I do think that it's important that back in 2021, interest rates were zero, and it was the expectation that rates would rise. Now we have the reality of interest rate hikes, and we're still back at these high levels. Now, why haven't prices pulled back already? Well, it's because of the expectation that interest rate hikes aren't going to last, and that when a recession does hit or deflationary forces become evident, then we're going to see interest rates coming down in a hurry. But that is also ignoring the fact that the pandemic delivered a massive boost in sales, and sustaining that rate of sales into the future is going to be difficult because it accelerated this the purchase routine, I guess, cycle for many companies, and but most particularly those that have are now are considered to be mega caps. So we're definitely getting some pause and consolidation. Now, when we think about Google, it had popped on the upside, and that was on the back of stronger sales. But let's just think then about who pays Google? Who are its biggest customers? Because this is one of the challenges in sustaining an outright forecast on the mega caps. It's on the assumption that they don't rely on anyone else for their income. But of course, we know that that's not true. So, looking at Google, we can see, for example, that its biggest customer represents about 0.35% of its revenue, which is TD SYNNEX. And Lots of these companies are probably those are not really those that people particularly pay attention to. Or, for example, I don't think anyone would have thought that RingCentral was one of the largest customers. But when we have companies that aren't doing particularly well, so let's just take the first and just look at that. So TD SYNNEX isn't the kind of company that most people have paid attention to. So let's just think about, well, Google is looking at these kinds of companies. Now, this is a technology reseller, so they have to advertise heavily on Google to try and sell their wares. But if people aren't buying technology, well, then that's going to be a difficult sell. So they're spending a lot of money on advertising via Google, but the share price has been falling now for 3 years. Now, it is testing the sequence of lower rally highs right now, but it's got to do better than that in order to confirm continued demand dominance. But the bigger picture, of course, is that if sufficiently large numbers of these companies aren't doing especially well, then their ability to sustain the to sustain their revenue and their spending on advertising is going to be constrained. So, for example, Kingfisher is at significantly below the peaks back in 2021. It had been trending downwards for a decade prior to the low in 2020, and I don't think there's been enough of a change in the business model to suggest that there's going to be a big recovery. So, how well are they going to be able to continue to sustain their marketing spend? And I think these are the important questions, because at Meta and Google, for example, they do phenomenal work, and they've got truly inspiring business models that have been incredibly successful. But the more successful they become, the greater their reliance is on the success of their customers. So then let's think about Meta. It has rebounded incredibly impressively, going from 100 to 325 in the space of about 10 months, and now it's starting to ebb. And I think this is what we should expect. Now, of course, we have CPI figures coming out tomorrow, and that will give us some perspective on what happens in terms of the inflation outlook. But the bond market is really finely balanced here. The yield peaked at over 4% about 10 or 11 months ago, and we're back in the region of 4% right now. If CPI surprises on the upside, well, that's not going to be great for bond yields. If, on the other hand, it surprises on the downside, then we'll have a different story. And I think then let's just think about what's happening in China. So deflationary forces are certainly rising. And they have outright deflation now for the first time in several years. But bond yields were actually higher in here today. So we're still in really quite depressed levels for yields. I think a lot of negative attitudes towards the Chinese economy have probably been priced in already. So then let's also pay attention to what's happening in the banking sector. If you've got a deflationary environment, that's not necessarily going to be great for consumer demand. But the size of China's economy is something that we should also pay attention to, because you had, for example, Ferrari coming out today saying that sales in China have picked up quite considerably, and that they've seen that more women are buying Ferraris now. Of course, the fact that the share price was barely changed on that news, and that it is overbought in the short term, would probably suggest that a lot of the good news has probably been already priced in. And then perhaps the biggest indicator of demand in luxury goods is Hermes, and the share has lost momentum around the 2,000 euro level, and it is continuing to pause here. Now, I think this is, I think, better evidence that we're starting to see some of the pressure coming to bear as a result of the higher interest rate environment. And I think it's important to then also highlight that Amazon popping on the upside last week on the back of strong earnings, that is a bit of an outlier. When we look at some of the other major retail sites, Target, for example, continues to trend downwards. And Etsy surprised on the downside with its earnings, and the share is right now in the region of the lower side of its range. And Shopify was once held out as the main competitor to Amazon, and it was down again in here today and back testing the region of the 200-day moving average. So if the recovery is going to remain intact, it's going to have to find support and do so in a hurry. And then we have eBay, which was a little steadier in here today, and there's a sequence of higher reaction lows over the last 10 months, but golly, it does have to hold that if the benefit of the doubt is going to be given to the upside. But then we have Mercado Libre, and that has rebounded quite impressively. This is, would be more like a direct competitor to Amazon, but in Latin America, and Latin American economies, having overcome their inflationary pressures, have the potential to outperform. And I suspect that we do have a short-term overbought condition, and it could easily come back down, but it could have then the potential to outperform. So, one of the other, I think, big wild cards remains the oil price. And oil was in positive territory again in here today, a resounding rebound from the lows put in yesterday, back testing the peak now from April all the way back into January. But this has clearly broken the downtrend. It is finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average. It is now breaking the sequence of lower rally highs. So this is, I think, a really clear signal that we're going to see higher energy. And that is going to ask a very big question, which is, have the actions of central bankers been the primary reason why inflation has come down, or is it simply because oil prices came down? So we're going to see how inflation works out, and perhaps at the surge that we're seeing currently in oil prices is going to contribute to some deflationary pressures as people simply will not be able to afford to spend on energy as well as everything else. Now, when we think then about the natural gas price, well, we have this environment right now in Australia where a couple of different locations are seeing strike action. One thing that I think is rather interesting is that we see various different ways of measuring natural gas in the futures market. So in the USA, they measure it as millions of or millions of barrels equivalent. Basically, it's a volume basis. When you look at the USA, it's British thermal units, so it's the specific energy. But what they do in the Netherlands is denominate volume based upon its electricity generation capacity. So natural gas popped on the upside in here today on the back of fear that the Australian strikes will last a while longer. And I don't think that that's likely. I certainly don't think that we're going to see another spike higher up to 350. But what is likely is that the additional risk premium in European gas is going to justify a higher floor. And that higher floor is going to be in the region of the previous peaks that had existed for considerably longer than a decade previous. And that really does help to highlight the issues that Europe has with energy, most particularly its cost. So obviously, this is a difficult environment, and they're going to have to come up with a way of dealing with it. Well, it would be easy to then just say, well, obviously nuclear is the best way to deal with it, but the reality is that Russia supplies most of the nuclear fuel for Europe's reactors. If they really wanted to hit Europe, they would simply stop exporting uranium, and they don't make a great deal of money from it relative to what they make from selling oil. But if they decided that they were going to have a nuclear fuel embargo, that would create a massive problem. So I do think it's rather interesting that Cintrus is starting to move here. They signed a deal with TerraPower 2 weeks ago that they're going to supply the high-assay, low-enriched uranium for the molten salt reactor that TerraPower is building in Wyoming. But it's that. That HALEU, let's just call it HALEU, fuel that will also be used in small modular reactors. And Centrus is the only producer of it. So, as we think then about where the potential is, well, this company, of course, used to be called USEC, and it did go bust. And we are still now at fractions of where the price was back before the big bust in 2007. But of course, the big question then is what's going to happen in terms of demand for nuclear fuel? Are we going to see these Generation 4 reactors built in size? Are we going to see a greater concentration in nuclear energy? I think that logically it makes a lot of sense, but politically it's going to be a difficult thing to get past. So, but again, this is a technological solution because a lot of these Generation 4 reactors are a lot safer. Now, let's then think about other technology sectors because Bitcoin today is down about $500. So it hasn't quite unwound the big pop on the upside yesterday. And I guess when I was recording yesterday, it had already ticked over into today. But I think that we're still in an environment where it's reg this is a story more about regulatory arbitrage. If the SEC decides to grant permission to spot ETFs, there will be a significant asset accumulation phase, and that will contribute to a pop on the upside. But it's also worth highlighting that we are less than a year away from the next halving. We can expect that there will be quite a bit of volatility, but there will also be a demand surge in the latter half of next year. Now, it's clearly a coincidence. We certainly don't have enough of back history to make a statistical conclusion, but every time there's been a halving, shortly afterwards, we've seen that monetary accommodation has become a much more pressing factor in the global economy. And it is not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that this time next year we'll start to see interest rates coming back down. And in that case, it is generally true that Bitcoin has been one of the best performing assets. Now, we're still right now in an environment where we have positive real interest rates, and that's weighing on the gold price. So, the real rate popped on the upside yesterday, and gold was down about $10 in here today, and still unwinding its overbought condition, and coming back in to test the region of the 200-day moving average. It's generally true that when you have the trend of real rates turning downwards, that it weighs on the value of the dollar. The dollar index is testing the sequence of lower rally highs, and it's currently sandwiched between the 200-day and the 1,000-day moving averages. If it fails at this level, that's going to help gold to find support, and I suspect that is likely. But it's when the trend of real rates begins to turn lower that's likely to act as a very powerful catalyst for gold prices. So We're in a rather interesting environment here because gold is coming back into an area which could be attractive from the perspective of buyers, but we haven't had a bullish catalyst yet to confirm demand. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.